Welcome to the serial audiobook presentation of The Rider, a Galactic Football League novella. Written by Scott Sigler and Paul E. Cooley. Performed by Scott Sigler. This novel is available as an ebook for Kindle and other e-readers, or as a full-length, ad-free, unabridged audiobook from Audible, iTunes, and Amazon. Find purchase links at scottsigler.com/The Rider. Hello, junkies. Welcome to Double Digits in the Rider Podcast. We are in episode number 10. My gosh, it's 2.5 months, you guys. Time just continues to sail by. Speaking of time and timely information, the day this episode drops, it is August 18th, 2017. Our room block code for Sigler Fest goes away September 3rd. That means if you're considering going to Sigler Fest and you have not booked a room, you're going to pay more for that room if you wait until September 3rd or after to book it. We're just trying to help you out here, you guys. Go to scottsigler.com/SiglerFest for that code. Come and join us. It is a great time in Las Vegas, October 6th through 7th. It is glorious. It is Sparta. It is that glorious. Last week and the week before, I teased I was working on a new novel, and now it is time for me to tell you what that new novel is. It is Mount Fitzroy. That's right. The sequel to Earthcore is finally afoot. This week, I was working on the outline, and I will also be working on the outline next week as well. But hopefully, I will be writing the actual novel come September. I am very, very excited about it. It has been a decade in the making, you guys. I will say that the outline looks very sexy right now. And I'm also going to go ahead and tell you there will be lots and lots of violence in this one. It's some old school Sigler. It is some old school Earthcore. You guys are going to eat it up. So that's the big news drop for the week, which means no talkie talk after the episode. Let me get you caught up on the story, and then we are going to get into it. Previously on The Rider, the Ridgebacks have moved into third place in the 4-team playoff standings, and they now control their own destiny. If they win their last game against the Lopu Ogres, they are guaranteed a playoff spot. But Bess's savage killing of a downed opposition mount in the last game will surely lead to a league suspension or worse. Can the Ridgebacks win without Bess? And Pete gets a visit from another member of the Ionath Krakens, and this time, a very unwelcome visit. Next on The Rider, episode number 10. The victory moved the Ridgebacks to 7 wins, 4 losses, and carried them into third place ahead of the Vosor 3 Gargantuans. Both teams had the same record, but Vosor had been swept 3-0 by the Rodina Devastators, dropping the Gargantuans' point differential to +5, while the Ridgebacks' win against Chichana had moved Roughland to +11. The Stompers had won as well, and were also 7-4. Their differential was also +5, but since they had lost to the Gargantuans earlier in the season and head-to-head play was the second-place tiebreaker, the Stompers remained in 5th place, 1 game out of tournament contention. 3rd place guaranteed nothing, though, because there were 3 teams jammed at 7-4. With the point differential, a win against the Lopu Ogres, the final game of the regular season, would put the Ridgebacks in the tournament. Done deal. The Ridgebacks could still make the tournament with a loss, but only if the Stompers or Gargantuans, or both, lost as well. Both of those teams' games were scheduled before the Ridgebacks' tilt against the Ogres, so come showtime, Pete and his teammates would know exactly what they had to do to qualify for the championship tournament. One more win, and they were in. It was hard to think about next week already. Hard to think about anything, really, but how much he hurt. Even the best suit of armor could only stop so much, and Pete's was far from the best. Bess's armor was a joke, and a most unfunny one at that. Would she have avoided her injuries with better gear? Salton was going to have to pay for repairs to her armor, at least, or Bess wouldn't be protected in the regular season's final match. Pete hurt, but at least he wasn't in the stadium's infirmary, like Clark. Critter was being checked for concussion symptoms by a hurrah doctor. That left Pete in the locker room with Dar and Ian. Their kids were giddy with the thrill of victory, still electrified by the crowd's chants and roars. Pete didn't feel electrified, nor electrocuted, maybe. He slowly stripped off his armor, dropping the cracked and dented pieces on the floor, not even bothering to hang them in his locker. If this was what it felt like to win, he sure didn't ever want to lose again. Every part of him ached, even the parts that might not be based in physical reality, because even his damn soul hurt. The whirlpool and the meds would ease the pain. The physical pain, anyway. His soul hurt, because the worst of his aches and pains hadn't come from the femora blast. Granted, those had rocked him like a Korak the Cutter right hook, but the real pounding came from staying in the saddle when Bess went rogue. No, his soul hurt because of what old Bess had done to the femora. The creature was dead. Bess killed it. She'd torn it apart. Pete was surprised she hadn't urinated on the corpse just in case the shaking and leg-eating and the primal roar weren't enough to establish her dominance and territory. After Bess had destroyed the femora and knocked one of the APMs out of the match, Pete's teammates made short work of capture the flag. The Mimtai had ferociously defended the resurrected flag, even knocking Clark out of the game with a swinging tail. Ian had distracted the beast, while Yar went airborne for the second time that afternoon, leaping up onto the Mimtai's back where Dar snagged the flag. The APM couldn't answer the call for the third game, which wound up being tug of war. With Bess, Yar, Missy, and Bucky pulling against the Mimtai in one APM, it was over quick. The Resurrected had come in undefeated, the team to beat, and the Ridgebacks had handed them a 3-0 ass-whipping. If only Pete could be happy about it. Someone was going to get chewed out for the Femora's death, and since Bess wasn't the most talkative girl in the world, that someone would be him. It cost millions to raise and train a mount. While it was a dangerous sport, there were rules in place to limit severe injury to mounts. Bess ripping off the Femora's leg? Not really a part of the game, to put it lightly. The locker room door opened. Salton and his big heavy G bodyguard came in. The leader's cornea swirled with light orange, an unmistakable sign of happiness. The heavy G was all smiles, as if somehow his working for the team owner made him part of the victory.
"Congratulations, riders," Salton said. "A hard-fought win against the best team in the league."
"Second best," Ian shouted. "They were only undefeated because they hadn't played us yet, boss."
"Quite true," Salton said. "One more win, and we are in the postseason tournament. We truly sent a signal to the rest of the league this afternoon."
Pete undid the clasps on his chest armor, let it tumble down to the floor. He loved how Salton used the word "we." Salton wouldn't be in a Cairo chair all evening now, would he? Salton's eye fell on Pete.
"Gesford wants to see us," he said. "Right away."
Pete knew that was coming, yet the knowledge didn't make hearing it any less exhausting.
"After I shower, Salton."
"Shower later,"
the leader said.
"Gesford is waiting in my stadium office. She must be elated with that performance."
Pete thought of making a stink about needing to clean up, but he was just too tired. Gesford was going to rip them. Putting it off would only prolong the agony. Sooner started, sooner done.
"Let's go, Salton," Pete said. "If Gesford wants to smell me as is, that's her business."
Pete had expected Gesford to be sitting behind Salton's desk, looking all important, a head game invalidating the leader's authority by occupying that small position of power. She wasn't. Instead, she was sitting on the desk's corner, legs crossed so that her skirt slipped up just over a bare knee, one hand on the flat desktop and her shoulders back. She looked so good, Pete almost stumbled. She was playing head games, all right, but they weren't aimed at Salton.
"Pete, fantastic performance," she said. "Come in, have a seat."
The commissioner was all smiles, smiles formed by those perfect lipstick lips.
"Pete, darling, the early viewership reports are coming back," Guessford said. "We're trending for an all-time high in the first viewings, almost 40% higher than last year's title match. But that's not all."
She slid off the desk in a move designed to sway her hips. Subtle, as one would expect from a veteran actress who could make almost any prefabricated gesture look natural, but Pete had also spent enough time in theatrics to know a rehearsed move when he saw one. Knowing it was rehearsed, however, didn't make it any less effective.
"Second viewing numbers are through the roof," Guessford said, as she walked to Sultan's rack of merchandise.
She picked up the plushie of Old Bess, cradled it in one arm, and slowly petted the thing like it was a coddled cat.
"Our analysts have never seen anything like it. It's too early to tell, Pete, but the week after broadcast ratings are going to be 5 to 6 times higher than anything we've shown before."
Sultan's eyes swirled with dark red.
"That is sensational," he said. "I never expected numbers of that kind."
"No one did," Guessford said.
Her lovely smile turned into a malicious grin.
"Including the networks. I can tell you one thing. They're all wishing they'd made us a better offer last week. With these numbers, I'm pulling my previous demands off the table and submitting new ones. I'm doubling what we were asking before."
Salton's eye flooded a light orange. The leader wasn't even trying to hide his emotions anymore.
"Doubling? The league will be instantly solvent. Every team will be instantly profitable before we sell a single ticket or a piece of merchandise."
Guessford nodded casually, as if such good news barely merited her attention.
"Dino Lishin was on the edge of something big, a pile of explosives waiting for a match," she said. "But today's show? That wasn't just a match. It was a dozen fuel tankers thrown into the pile and lit with a tactical nuke. Next season, we'll all be part of an entirely new league."
The two were already counting credits that had yet to come in. Pete liked money as much as the next guy, but he wasn't in this for just a paycheck.
"I'm more concerned with this season," he said. "We have a match next week and the tournament after that. I know the Resurrected are going to call for Bess's suspension."
Guessford sniffed, shrugged.
"They already have," she said. "I told them I was evaluating the evidence. And I will, Peter darling. But I watched the game live, and since I am the only authority when it comes to suspensions and fines, I can assure you there'll be no suspension. I will issue a stern warning."
"A warning," Pete said. "And what will this warning say?" Guessford shrugged again.
"I'll come up with some wording that sounds severe, but doesn't mean all that much."
Salton's orange color brightened.
"That is excellent news," he said.
Pete couldn't believe it. How were they getting off so easy? It was like Guessford didn't really understand the implications of what had happened.
"Bess killed another mount," Pete said, knowing he should shut up and be grateful, but unable to stop himself. "Not in the act of play, but when the other mount was down. And Bess just gets to keep playing? No punishment?"
Salton turned on Pete.
"Do you want us to lose next week? Is that what you are trying to accomplish?"
No, Pete didn't want his team to lose. He wanted to win, more than anything. But still, after what Bess had done, the lack of control he had over a moving mountain of muscle and teeth. Guessford smiled, not just with her mouth, but her eyes as well.
"Pete, you know the phrase, don't kid a kidder?"
Pete nodded.
"There's another version of it," Guessford said. "Don't try an act to an actor."
He had no idea what she was saying, so he kept still and held her gaze.
"Pete, we're about to land a 5-season contract that will make every owner in this league rich, that will make you rich," she said. "Teams will have more money, more resources, more endorsers. This is where it all begins. I mean, really begins. Everything up until now has led to this moment. And who made that moment happen? You and Bess. A little well-timed ultra-violence, and the networks are eating out of my hands. Between your gallant run with the lance and your masterful control of your mount, Pete, all of our hard work finally pays off more than we could have ever hoped. Next season, Dinolition is in the black.
Her smile, it was genuine. She wasn't acting. She thought Pete had made Bess kill the Femora.
She thought Pete had, what was the right word for it? She thought Pete had executed that mount, sacrificed it to the great gods of broadcasting so he could make more money?
You're a star, Pete, Gesford said. Rules don't apply to stars like they do to other people. You'll find that more and more as your fame rises. And with this broadcast, trust me, darling, it'll rise, and it'll rise fast.
Pete loved being famous, at least as famous as he was. That gleam in Gesford's eye, she was talking about fame on a completely different level, something she knew well and craved constantly. And now that Pete had it, or was about to have it, it changed the way she thought of him. Salton opened a desk drawer. He pulled out a bottle of gin and three glasses.
We've won the match. We are going to be wealthy, and there are no repercussions for Pete's brilliant bit of showmanship. As the humans say, this calls for a drink.
He set the glasses on the desktop, but before he could pour, Gesford put her manicured hand on top of them.
I told you I'm in charge of suspensions and fines, she said. No suspensions for Bess, but there are repercussions. 10 million of them, in fact.
The light orange faded from Salton's eye.
10 million, he said. You are fining me 10 million credits?
Gesford removed her hand from the glasses. She gently took the bottle and poured three drinks.
That's right, she said. How else do you think I can get the Resurrected's ownership to go along with no suspension? You have to pay for their next mount.
Salton pointed a pettipelt finger at Pete.
He's the one who killed the mount. Fine him.
Gesford set the bottle on the table. She pushed a glass across the desk to Salton, then handed one to Pete and took the third for herself.
Salton, if you want Bess to play next week in Lopu, then you need to pay that fine.
I do not have that kind of money,
Salton said. And for the first time, Pete wondered if he saw a trace of pink swirl across the leader's cornea. Pink, the color of fear. Gesford smoothed the hand over her skirt.
Honestly, Salton, you're not thinking ahead. If you make the tournament, your franchise gets the tourney bonus, which just so happens to be 10 million credits. All you have to do next week is beat Lopu, and the 10 mil is a wash. Pay the damn fine, win, finish the season, and your problems are over.
She raised her glass.
To the future of Dinolition!
She knocked back the entire glass of gin like it was a shot of some candy-flavored liqueur. If that was how things were done at the top, Pete didn't mind. He knocked his back as well, felt the burn of it going down. Junkie gin was absolute swill. He thumped the glass on Salton's desk.
I need time,
Salton said.
10 million. It's too much. Too soon.
Gesford gently set her glass on the desktop.
Come on, Salton. It's only cash flow, she said. 3 more weeks and that 10 million will be a drop in the bucket, right?
She walked past Pete, letting her fingertips trail up his shoulder as she headed for the door.
Make it happen, Salton, Gesford said. The deal is ours to dictate if all the teams are happy, and right now the Resurrected are not happy. They get that money, it'll be enough to make this blow over. Everyone wins.
She held her hand near her nose, rubbed her thumb against the tip of her pointer and ring fingers. Pete saw a gleam of wetness reflect the lights above. Her fingertips were wet with his sweat.
I'll be seeing you, Pete, she said.
She turned and walked out of the office. Pete had thought Gesford didn't want him because he was so small. That wasn't it at all. She hadn't wanted him because he wasn't her kind, wasn't the famous kind. The funny thing was, if that was what it took for her to want him, he wasn't so sure he wanted her anymore.
10 million,
Salton said.
10 million.
Something told Pete this was the wrong time to ask for new armor. He thought of trying to console the leader, but the fact was that Pete didn't like him at all, and consoling was something you only did for friends. Then, something on the desk caught Pete's eye. Not the time to ask for new armor, no, but Salton should have provided for his mounts and riders long ago. Pete handed the still full glass of gin to the leader.
Take a drink, boss, Pete said. In fact, maybe you should take several.
A trembling Pettypal Pan took the glass, raised it to the leader's vertical mouth. Salton took a sip.
Oh, come on, boss, Pete said. Toss that back like a man. I mean, like a leader.
Salton was so overwhelmed, he didn't bother to argue. He drank the glass. Pete poured him another. Then another. 5 glasses and 30 minutes later, Salton slumped back in his office chair. His big eyelid closed over his big eye. And when it did, Pete did what he had to do.
Get some rest, boss, he said. It'll be all better tomorrow.
With that, Pete walked out of the office.
Maybe not better for you, but definitely better for old Biss.
The bar rang with raucous noise. Sentients wearing Ridgeback's gear danced, drank, and shouted. Fortunately, most knew to leave Pete alone. Except for the occasional organized cheers for him and Bess, and a few thumbprint requests, he'd been able to drink in peace. He probably should have had some kind of security with him, but he just wanted a few minutes to himself. He believed the two terrorists had acted alone. One was dead, the other was in jail, so there was no more threat. At least, for now. If Dino-Lition continued to grow, there would be more attention, could be more danger. Combine that with Guessford's claim that Pete's celebrity status was about to blow up, and maybe nights like this, going to the bar alone, having a bourbon or three, were numbered. He wanted to enjoy it while he still could. Pete had left the other riders to pack up the gear. He'd join them in an hour or so for the march back to Ranch Ridgeback. The local cops would escort them, making sure there was no trouble. Charlie, the bartender, came over, tapped the empty shot glass resting on the bar in front of Pete.
Can I get you another?
Charlie sounded funny. Pete looked up at him. Charlie didn't look quite right. For a moment, Pete started counting the drinks he'd had, wondering if he'd had more than he realized. Then he understood why Charlie didn't look quite right. Because it wasn't Charlie. Same long red beard, same portly stature, same hair, but the eyes were different.
Who the hell are you? Have you been waiting on me all this time?
Charlie, not Charlie, smiled. I have. Looks like you've got a lot on your mind. How about another shot? I think you'll like this vintage. Horribly confused, Pete simply nodded. The bartender produced a new shot glass from beneath the bar. He poured a finger's worth, set the bottle down, then rested his elbows on the bar and leaned close. The name is Federico Esteban Giuseppe Gonzaga, Charlie, not Charlie, said. But you can call me Fred. John Tweedy's guy.
You got the message?
Fred smiled. Can't put one past you, can we?
Where's Charlie?
Taking a break, Fred said. A paid break. You paid for it, by the way. Did John mention my day rate and that you'll pay all expenses? Pete cringed inside. He should have asked about rates before sending that message. This guy had come all the way from Ionath?
Do I want to know what this is going to cost me?
Fred shrugged. It depends on if you want to barf up your drinks all over this bar.
I'd rather not.
Then you don't want to know. Pete sighed. He drained the shot.
What's with the disguise?
There's a few people that aren't too fond of me, Fred said. Which is weird, because even in this crazy beard, I look damn good. Now, do we want to chat about my looks all day, or are you ready to hear what I found about your little visitors? Pete tapped his shot glass, nodded. Fred filled it. The warrior is a small-timer, nothing to worry about, he said. Just a thug for hire. The other two, though, he pointed to the glass. You might want to knock that one back as well. Pete did as he was told. The liquor burned going down. Coelan, the Kredorakian, he works for Tianok the Key, Fred said. Tianok represents one Anna Volani. You know who she is? Pete rested his face in his hands.
Yeah, he said. I'm a football fan. I know who she is.
Anna Volani. The fact that she was the hottest crime lord in the galaxy didn't change the fact that she was a gangster. She owned the OS-1 orbiting Death. She probably owned most of OS-1 itself, for that matter. The city of Matterch, at least, was firmly under her control.
Dino Lishan is small potatoes for her, Pete said. Why does she want in?
Fred shrugged. Volani loves money and power. She must be bullish on Dino Lishan's future. That's my guess, and guesses are free. Do you want me to find out for sure?
No, Pete said. Whatever this costs me right here, that's enough.
Suit yourself. Tianok was Volani's lackey. Sultan had been talking to that lackey about selling Bess, maybe even selling the entire team. Volani had taken over the OS-1 orbiting Death when original owner Sick of the Death died courtesy of a shuttle flying into his office. That showed what Volani was capable of. If she wanted something, nothing was off limits.
This is bad, Pete said.
It is. Be careful in what choices you make from here on out. John says he likes you. If anything happens to you, John will be sad. You ever seen a sad John Tweety? Pete shook his head.
It's awful, Fred said.
There's a lot of crying. You know, the kind that involves wailing and dripping snot. Best to avoid. I have a little more info if you want to hear it.
Go ahead, Pete said. It can't get any worse.
Fred laughed. You're cute. Two more things. First, I found out she's looking to field a mixed-race, mixed-fauna team.
No one has a mixed-fauna team.
That's probably why she wants to be the first, Fred said. More marketable to multiple systems, maybe. It's worked well for the GFL. Volani knows the sports business better than I do. It made sense to Pete. At least as much as anything could make sense, the liquor was starting to hit home.
You said you had two things. What was the other?
Fred tapped the empty shot glass. There's a little holocube in the bottom of this. Tap it 3 times on the bar, look inside, watch closely, because it will erase after it plays.
What are you, an intergalactic spy or something?
Just someone who wants to stay off Volani's radar, Fred said. The undying love and attention of one GFL owner is plenty for me. He slid a data cube across the bar. That has a movie of a horse on it. Boring as hell. If you ever need my services again, just watch it and I will find you. Got it? Pete nodded.
Thanks.
Don't mention it, Fred said. Now, for the movie that matters. Go ahead and watch. Pete tapped the glass 3 times, set it flat, leaned close, and peered inside with one eye. A low-res holo played. A nice house, one in the better part of Roughland. Did Pete recognize that house? Hard to tell with the image so small. Tianok and Coelan walked up to the door, the thuggish Quith warrior with them. Volani's crew. Then, the door opened, and Pete knew why the house had seemed familiar. He'd been there before.
Ian, God damn it.
The dwarf smiled and stood aside, letting the key, the Kredorakian, and the warrior enter. The door shut. The image faded.
Can I get you another?
Pete looked up at Fred, only it wasn't Fred. It was Charlie again. The actual Charlie.
Where's the other guy?
Charlie shrugged, spoke quietly as he toweled off the bar top.
Gone. You won't be seeing him again. He said you're going to get an invoice from a public relations firm. He suggests you pay it promptly. Another shot?
Pete looked at the glass. Another would be nice. One more, though, and he'd be drunk. Volani, Sultan's dirty dealings, Purist Nation terrorists, Ian's underhanded behavior, maybe staying sober was the best choice.
I've had enough, thanks.
Charlie laughed.
Since when?
Since tonight, Pete said. Give me a water.
Charlie did as he was asked, putting a mug of water in front of Pete.
I normally don't bother you, the bartender said. But are you okay? Our mutual friend. He seems like serious business. You okay with him? Or are those idiots with the poisoned meat getting to you?
Pete sipped the cold water. It cooled his throat and somewhat staunched the fire rolling in his belly. His small fingers thrummed on the wooden bar.
I'm fine. They've been dealt with.
Bess survive all right?
She had. Her opponent had not. What would happen if Pete lost control of her, lost total control, and the T-Rex's primitive instincts made her turn on the other Ridgeback mounts? Maybe even the riders.
She did, Pete said. Doesn't she always?
I guess she does at that. I don't know what you're down about then. You hung a tray on an undefeated team, and your new girl rode like a champ today.
Hung a tray. Dino-lition slang for a 3-0 shutout.
Pete nodded. Yeah, Dar surprised me. She's going to be one hell of a rider.
Charlie made a sound that was halfway between a mm-hmm and a yummy noise.
And she's one hell of a looker, too, he said.
Right.
Pete glared up at the large man.
I'm sure you'd have to find some interesting positions to make that work. And that's the novelty of it, right?
A blush rose to the red-bearded man's cheeks.
Whoa, Pete, I didn't mean...
The look on Charlie's face made Pete instantly regret his words. Part of Pete still lived in the past and would never escape it. A past where little people, especially women, were novelties for normal-sized adults with money and curiosity. Sometimes, it was still strange to hear that someone was attracted to a little person not as a freak, but as one human being to another.
Pete sighed. I'm sorry, Charlie. I shouldn't have said that. Just a bad day, is all.
A purse-lip nod told Pete that all was forgiven.
Screw the water, Pete said. Give me another bourbon. Leave the bottle.
The bartender refilled Pete's shot glass, set the half-full bottle next to it. Pete picked up the glass and stared into the golden liquid. In the glass's reflection, he saw Quith Warrior standing behind him. Even from the tiny image, Pete recognized the sentient. Overwhelmed was no longer the word for how he felt. Drowning or suffocating might be better. This was most definitely not good. Pete slammed the drink and placed the shot glass upon the bar.
What do I owe you, Charlie?
Charlie's face had gone pale. His eyes were fixed on a point over Pete's head.
That one is on the house, Pete. A bottle, too. I gotta go wait on another customer.
With that, Charlie scooted off to smile at other patrons. Pete spun in his chair to face the warrior. The sentient was huge, as in GFL huge. Pete had watched enough Kraken's broadcasts to know this one on sight. First, the terrorists, then the news of Lonnie, and now this? Pete wondered if it was possible for this day to get any worse.
Why, Varak the Mean, Pete said. You come for my thumbprint?
Pete made his words slur slightly. Better to let the warrior think he was drunk, better to be underestimated. While John Tweedy might come to Roughland for a social visit, Pete doubted Virac was here to watch Dino-lition matches. Virac was a star football player, true, but the GFL wasn't in season, and the warrior's main job was that of personal bodyguard to Greedock the Splithead, one of the galaxy's most notorious and dangerous gangsters.
Your thumbprint, Virac said. I am not interested in the thumbprint of someone from a fifth-tier sport. My Shamakath would like a word with you.
Pete patted the empty bar stool next to him.
Well, tell him to come on in. Sit down, and I will buy him all the gin he wants.
Come with me, or I will drag you out of here,
the warrior said. Pete smiled.
I'd kind of like to see you try.
He gestured to the rest of the bar. At least a dozen people were staring at him and Virac at that very moment.
I'm a bit of a celebrity here, big guy. You try anything, and you're in for a mob a beating.
Virak's eyes swirled with thin threads of black.
You are making this difficult, he said.
Pete shrugged.
Well, then make it easy. Have your Shamakath come in and sit down.
It involves Sultan,
Virak said.
My Shamakath thinks it is information that is in your best interest to know.
Pete felt a chill swirl through his chest. Sultan and his money troubles. Was Greedock involved? Pete had never met Greedock, and as far as he knew, hadn't done anything to offend the gangster. It was dangerous to go with Virak, but Pete wanted to know Sultan's connection to Greedock. He grabbed the bottle and slid off the stool.
All right, big fella, take me to your leader.
That was the Rider episode number 10. It would appear that Greedock the Splithead has reared his ugly, one-eyed, petty-pelped head into this fray. And we have to wonder what's next for Pete and for Virak and for Greedock the Splithead and all the other people, all the other characters involved in the story. I can give you a hint. If Greedock is involved, it's definitely not good for anyone except for Greedock. So we'll see how this all plays out. We will be back next week with episode number 11 of The Rider. And until then, I will talk to you all real soon. You have been listening to The Rider, a Galactic Football League novella written and performed by Scott Sigler. Produced by A. Kovacs. Serialized audiobook engineered by Steve the Iceberg Rickyberg. Follow Scott Sigler on Twitter and Instagram. The handle is @ScottSigler or join his Facebook group at facebook.com/ScottSigler. Theme music is the song Drift by Separation of Sanity off their album The Crucible, available on iTunes and at Amazon.com. Audiobook copyright Empty Set Entertainment 2017.